from NPR Music. You're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan.
Look out behind you.
Look out. Oh, no! He scared me. That's Jacob Gans. Jacob's here, and he's going to be with us for a while. Maybe, well, who knows? 4 or 6 weeks, and maybe 4 or 6 weeks, or maybe...
We'll see.
Yeah, it depends what you do to Robin Hilton. Robin's
exactly,
on leave for a little bit.
Robin's on leave. Yeah, he has a knife in his back.
Air quotes on that leave. And we're doing today... One second. The songs that scare.
Really scare you, really scare you. The songs that actually scare you.
And I know when I was a kid, when Psycho came out, this music and that film just absolutely devastated me. And I don't think there's anyone who writes music that scares me more than Bernard Herrmann did for Psycho. This is even just a scene. This part of the scene is when she's, I think, absconded the money and is driving in a car. And just, you know, everything is scary. Somebody in a car on a street.
Yeah, he writes scary driving music.
Right. And then this part that comes later that everyone knows where, who is the actress?
Janet Leigh.
Where the actress Janet Leigh is in a hotel room. She's got the money. She's going through accounting records and this music's playing in the background. And all she's doing is writing figures on a piece of paper, and it's scary. And she's sort of gotten things figured out, and she flushes it down the toilet. And then she goes in to take her shower. And the most bone-chilling music I think truly ever written is this music right here.
One of the most awesome things about that is just how long it takes her to die.
Yes.
Spoiler alert.
Yes, she does die. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it takes forever. It's like, and your gut tightens up a little bit more with every passing second.
And she pulls that shower curtain down, right?
The rings pop off.
Yeah, and it goes from that scene with the blood, which I think was chocolate syrup, with the blood. Sorry, spoiler alert too, with the blood going down the drain, and then drain real close up, big circle goes to her eye that's just open forever.
Yeah, I mean he's a Hitchcock was an amazing filmmaker, and that music just wouldn't fit with anything else. Yeah,
they were totally a team. Bernard Herrmann, he conducted this music too. We're here doing songs that scare. We've asked you for picks, and you gave us hundreds. We'll put a list together and put it on a blog post of what we think were probably unanimously the scariest darn things that we heard. But Jacob and I are going to pick some, too. We'll play your picks. We'll play our picks. And what do you have?
I think the place for me to start was maybe the first song that I ever thought was really, really scary. It happened probably because I didn't know it was going
Flying
to happen.
Purple People Eater.
It was not Flying Purple. I mean, I'm sure that there were earlier songs that were scary. I'm sure that there were monster songs that when I was a kid. But the first song, it felt unsafe. It felt very strange. It felt really foreign. And it was all the more so for being a surprise. I was in summer day camp when I was probably 11 years old. And a girl who was a few years older than me, who I remember always wore a denim jacket with torn off sleeves, so it was frayed around there's like a vest with frayed shoulders, said, "Here, listen to this," and put like puffy little foam earphones on my head and played Power Slave by Iron Maiden.
Empire.
Do you think it was the voice? What do you think it was?
I think it was a combination of both, that I'd never heard guitar being played like that, and I'd never heard somebody sing like that. And, you know, now we've heard, you know, we both know Lars Gotrich. We've heard music metal that's much, much scarier than this. But at the time, yeah, for a kid who had never heard anything that was heavy, mm-hmm. like, the idea that somebody would choose to make music like this was frightening, you know. And then I saw the cover of the cassette, and it, you know, they've got their little their scary little mascot on it. It only got more terrifying for me. From there, I'm sure it was years before I could make myself listen to metal anytime after that.
Iron Maiden, Power Slave, songs that scare. Well, let's pick a listener one. Actually, here's one, a listener one, and on one of my picks at the same time. A two for one, and I bet it's one of yours, too. It's Sufjan Stevens, John Wayne Gacy. Just the story of the man who murdered 30-plus young teens. The sadness of the story.
The bizarreness of the story, too. Right. Dressed up as a clown.
Dressed up as a clown. His father beat him as a child. Got hit on the head by a swing, which gave him a big blood clot on the brain. And that changed his life too. So much sadness in that story, and so much creepiness. I think songs that scare can be like Psycho, where it's where the sound is chilling. This is a sweet song, but when you listen to the words, it gets really creepy because it's a true story.
There are parts when it almost sounds loving, which makes it all the creepier.
That's right.
Father was a drinker, and his mother cried in bed. Folding John Wayne's t-shirts when the swing set hit his head. The neighbors, they adored him for his humor. Underneath the house there, find the few living things riding fast in their sleep. All the dead, 27 people, even more, they were boys with their cars, summer jobs. Oh my God. Dressed up like a clown for them, with his face painted white and red. And on his best behavior, in a dark room on the bed, he kissed them all. He'd kill 10,000 people with a slight of his hand, running far, running fast to the death. He took off all their clothes for them. He put a cloth on their lips, quiet hands, quiet kiss on the moon. Behavior, I am really just like him. Look beneath the floorboards for the secrets I have hid.
That's breathtaking.
It really is. And there are a couple of lines in that song that get me, that I forget about every time, and it get me when I listen to it. The line, is it he kissed them all? And then that the other line, I mean, he's speaking of, I guess he's speaking of John Wayne Gacy and the boys he killed. But the other line that gets me, it seems to be Sufjan Stevens singing about Gacy, where he says, "In my best behavior, I'm really just like him," which is a lot, which is a sentiment that I just do not. It's hard to understand. It's like he sings it so sweetly,
yeah,
and he sings it so matter-of-factly, and in that moment, you're just like, who is this guy singing? Who's nearly as scary as the guy he's singing about? Because you're just impossible it's impossible to relate.
Look beneath the floorboards.
Yeah. Oof.
Well, let's go with someone happier, like Tom Waits.
Totally, yeah. Tom Waits is never creepy, right?
That's right. Tom Waits is probably chosen, as in all of the hundreds and hundreds of comments we've gotten, probably the one that was mentioned most, I think, for a truly scary song. And
Tom Waits is, he's the guy you would go to if you want somebody to scare your, if Tom Waits is your buddy and you're trying to scare your neighbor, like you'd get Tom Waits to leave a weird voicemail, right?
Tom?
Yeah. I mean, I was talking with some people today, and Tom Waits came up as just like a guy was imitating Tom Waits singing theme songs to 80s sitcoms, and it's like that. It's comic and it's scary, but Tom Waits has made his career on being a weird sort of comic version of a terrifying monster sounding guy. But the song that I think is the scariest that Tom Waits has recorded, and the song picked by Simone Morris Martin in the comments of the blog post, is a song called "What's He Building in There?" And it's maybe not a real, it's not what you think of when you think of Tom Waits' typical growly piano ballad type songs. She says, "My best friend and I listened to that song when we were home alone around age 11 and got so scared just being indoors that we had to wait on the front porch for her parents to come home." Yeah, I've been there.
Great.
What's he building in there? What the hell is he building in there? He has subscriptions to those magazines. He never waves when he goes by. He's hiding something from the rest of us. He's all to himself. I think I know why. He took down the tire swing from the pepper tree. He has no children of his own, you see. He has no dog. He has no friends. And his lawn is dying. What about all those packages he sends? What's he building in there? With that hook light on the stairs. What's he building in there? I'll tell you one thing, he's not building a playhouse for the children. What's he building in there? And what's that sound from underneath the door? He's pounding nails into a hardwood floor. And I swear to God, I heard someone moaning low. I keep seeing the blue light of a TV show. He has a router and a table saw. And you won't believe what Mr. Stitches saw. There's poison underneath the sink, of course. But there's also enough formaldehyde to choke a horse. What's he building in there? What the hell is he building in there? I heard he has an ex-wife in some place called Mayor's Income, Tennessee. And he used to have a consulting business in Indonesia. But what's he building in there? He has no friends, but he gets a lot of mail. I bet he spent a little time in jail. I heard he was up on the roof last night signaling with a flashlight. And what's that tune he's always whistling? What's he building in there? What's he building in there? We have a right to know.
He doesn't have a lot of friends, but he gets a lot of mail.
Yeah, Tom Waits is a comedian, for yeah. sure. He knows he's got you there.
Yeah, that's great. Let's up the tempo.
Yeah, let's pick up the tempo a little bit. I mean, we've got to give people a chance to catch their breath after that, right?
And nothing like some good counterpoint. What is a great rockin' song is a song by the Decemberists, Creepy as Hell. Lyrically speaking.
Lyrically, not musically. I mean, you'd never know if you didn't listen very closely to what Colin Molloy is saying, but he manages to turn a very straightforward rock song into evil.
Yeah, yeah. He listened to lots of English ballads, which we could play some of, but I think he andied up here. And yeah. Let's play the break song from Hazards of Love.
That song's all the creepier. I mean, Colin Molloy writes as characters all the time, right? And obviously, he's writing as somebody here who has killed all the children, all of his own children.
For good reason.
Yeah, they're terrible, and he would prefer not to have them, yeah. And he would prefer to be able to woo women other than their mother. So one of them dies in childbirth, blessedly taking her mother along. Mm-hmm. This song is even creepier for the fact that Colin Molloy on a solo record has a really lovely song about his own wife being pregnant and giving birth, which is, you know, like put those two songs next to each other, and it makes you very happy that you think that you know who the real Colin Molloy is.
Right. Just like we think we know Sufjan Stevens.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah. Where should I go? How about... I'm going to just start playing this song and then I'll talk about it. One of my earliest concert memories is seeing Pink Floyd at the Kennedy Center in Washington, 1972. And they played this song from Amagama, which was the song's Careful With That Axe, Eugene. And it was the first time I ever saw pyrotechnics on a stage. And this song is an 8-minute build to a relentless scream and an explosion on stage that scared the living daylights out of me. So let's just listen. What'd you think of that scream?
That scream is terrifying. I mean, like, if you, I mean, you prepared me for it, so I was able to grip the arms of my chair and wait. But I feel like if you, when any time that somebody can sneak up on you and surprise you, throw something at you that you weren't expecting, I mean, that's the definition of fear, right? It provokes like that.
Yeah.
Cold sweat.
I think something
response.
And something else on this record, Amagama, which is, and music of that time was, for the most part, until this time, music was pretty happy-go-lucky. They're 3-minute pop songs. If you think of your world of music as being that, and then you hear this, it's even more incredible a contrast. We've all now heard music like that.
It sounds damaged.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it sounds like they, and they kind of sneak it up on you. They kind of like build slowly until you cannot deny that whoever is playing this stuff wants to hurt or terrify you.
Pink Floyd. I'm here with Jacob Gans. Jacob is an editor for The Record here at NPR Music, and is co-hosting, and will be for depends on what he does with Robin's body.
I'll never tell.
That's right.
I'll never tell anyone. My next pick is scary, I think, because the guys who make it seem so confident and calm in their ability to be scary. They've made a lot of different kinds of music. They're an Australian and American band called Liars. They've made a full album about witches, which this song is not from. Their prettiest song is on the same album that this song comes from. But I think I picked this song because I think, in the same way that those few lines on the Sufjan Stevens record, the Sufjan Stevens song about John Wayne Gacy are creepy, it's just kind of impossible to understand where these guys are coming from. They seem like they're aliens who have the ability to bore into your brain and do something awful, and it doesn't seem like a big deal to them. They're not a metal band who's really trying to scare you. They're not Tom Waits who's putting on this growly voice. They're looking you straight in the eye and telling you the way that the world looks to them, and that is occasionally terrifying. And this song is called It Fit When I Was a Kid.
Slowly through the dark, made my way up all your stairs, crystals flying everywhere.
They're kind of like,
yeah,
you can hear them. Yeah, that's spooky. I mean, like, these guys are kind of like druids or some kind of weird cult that, you know, chases you, but very slowly. And I can listen to that song and I can feel my eyes kind of dilate and my heart rate picks up and I feel like I need to run away a little bit.
Yeah, these guys don't feel like they're just playing a song.
No, they feel like they're playing with you.
Yeah, right.
Like they're messing
yeah.
with you.
Yeah, that's Liars. It Fit When I Was a Kid is the name of the song. Drums Not Dead is the name of the album. Let's do another listener pick, and we'll do another, maybe I'll do another pick, and we'll go on out. I'm here with Jacob Gans. We're doing songs that scare. We'll have a whole list of things up online, and I'll do a blog post. And we'll put together, from the blog post that we wrote, Claire Flynn, our intern, put together a list of some of the most mentioned scary songs, and the ones we went through that did, in fact, scare us. So we'll do that. So why don't you pick a listener one, Jacob?
I mean, we could, that list is great. There are tons of things we could have picked. I mean, and it just reinforces how sometimes it's just completely situational that something scares you. Like, people mention things like Hotel California.
Right.
Which I actually tend to agree with is a terrifying song. Or other, you know, like other soundtrack theme songs, like the Tubular Bells song from The Exorcist.
A couple of people mentioned a couple of Beatles songs, Revolution Number 9. The creepiness of the story of Maxwell Silverhammer is creepy. The Black Sabbath got mentioned. Lead Belly, Sleep Last Night, which is a really creepy old song.
Yeah.
Tubular Bells, you mentioned soundtracks. That was certainly one that came to mind.
lots of murder ballad type songs, lots of songs by people like Gillian Welch or Nico Case. I think somebody probably mentioned that Nick Cave song with Kylie Minogue, which is a little bit of a terrifying song.
The Cure lullaby song, PJ Harvey. She can be creepy, scary in just about anything she could do.
Yeah, she. I think it's a lot. A lot of this stuff has is about the person's ability to convince you that they're in a harrowing situation, and she can do that almost better than anybody else.
And there was a Nina Simone song that does that. I think it was called The Pirate Song. So which one did you pick up from this list?
The song that I picked up from this list is by Hayden. It was suggested by Keith G on Facebook. And it's called When This Is Over. And Keith G writes, "When This Is Over by Hayden is frightening on almost every level, including because it's so transfixing that you both want to listen to it and want to stop listening to it. It's based on Susan Smith drowning her two boys in South Carolina, and it's sung from the perspective of the older of those two boys. Just totally crushing and frightening. I also remember when I first heard it thinking that it was scary that an artist would put himself into those shoes at all. Give it a listen. I dare you."
We're dared. Here we go. Hayden.
Awake up. Beside you in Mom's car, I tried to get you out. You're strapped to the back seat. I am too.
Wow, yeah. I mean, that song, you want to keep pulling back from it. You want it to stop.
The perspective of
exactly.
The singer.
Just as Keith G says, I mean, you want to stop listening to it. You want to, you know, give yourself some distance to it, and then you have to keep reminding yourself that it's actually from the perspective of a young boy in the back of a car who's going to die. The scariest thing about that song is his ability to put himself in somebody else's position and commit to it so fully.
As a performer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to play something that I thought was one of the creepiest things when I was a teen. This is a song. Do you know The Gift by the Velvet Underground?
I don't.
It's a sprawling, I don't know, I'm going to say about 8 minute tale that John Cale tells over crazy guitar psychedelia of a love affair that Waldo has with a girl, and he decides the best thing he can do is to mail himself in a package to her. And the whole song is his anticipation of this girl, who you'll learn what she thinks of Waldo, his anticipation of her opening the gift, his package. And it's just brilliantly told. And we'll go out on that. This is Songs That Scare.
That's maybe the creepiest thing I've ever heard of in my entire life.
Wait till you hear the way Kale tells it. We'll put more songs online, Songs That Scare. This is fun, Jacob. And
it's great.
A little scary.
I can't wait to come back and do something pretty and nice.
Look forward to it. And we'll put up a blog post, add to it. We'll put up a Spotify playlist as well. And you can add to that as well. When you recover from Halloween, we'll have St. Vincent for you at the 930 Club in Washington. I'm going to Moog Fest with Jacob, and we're going to catch a bunch of shows and bring those back, too. Some may be scary.
It'll be over Halloween weekend.
Yes. I'm Bob Boylan, along with Jacob Gans. For NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered.
Waldo Jeffers had reached his limit. It was now mid-August, which meant he had been separated from Marcia for more than 2 months. In 2 months, all he had to show were 3 dog-eared letters and 2 very expensive long-distance phone calls. True, when school had ended and she'd returned to Wisconsin, he to Locust, Pennsylvania, she had sworn to maintain a certain fidelity. She would date occasionally, but merely as amusement. She would remain faithful. But lately, Waldo had begun to worry. He'd had trouble sleeping at nights. And when he did, he had horrible dreams. He lay awake at night, tossing and turning underneath his pleated quilt protector, tears welling in his eyes as he pictured Marcia, her sworn vows overcome by liquor and the smooth soothings of some Neanderthal, finally submitting to the final caresses of sexual oblivion. It was more than the human mind could bear. Visions of Marcia's faithlessness haunted him. Daytime fantasies of sexual abandon permeated his thoughts. And the thing was, they wouldn't understand how she really was. He, Waldo, alone understood this. He had intuitively grasped every nook and cranny of her psyche. He'd made her smile. She needed him. He wasn't there. The idea came to him on the Thursday before the Mama's parade was scheduled to appear. He just finished mowing and edging the Adelson's lawn for $1.50, and I checked the mailbox to see if there was at least a word from Marcia. There was nothing but a circular from the Amalgamated Aluminum Company of America inquiring into his own needs. At least they cared enough to write. It was a New York company. You could go anywhere in the mails. Then it struck him. He didn't have enough money to go to Wisconsin in the accepted fashion, true. But why not mail himself? It was absurdly simple. He would ship himself parcel post special delivery. The next day, Waldo went to the supermarket to purchase the necessary equipment. He brought masking tape, a staple gun, and a medium-sized cardboard box just right for a person of his build. He judged that with a minimum of jostling, he could ride quite comfortably. A few air holes, some water, a burst of night snacks, and it would probably be as good as going tourist. By Friday afternoon, Waldo was set. He was thoroughly packed, and the post office had agreed to pick him up at 3 o'clock. He'd marked the package fragile, and as he sat curled up inside, resting on a foam rubber cushioning he thoughtfully indicated, he tried to picture the look of awe and happiness on Marcia's face as she opened the door, saw the package, tipped the deliverer, and then opened it to see her Waldo finally there in person. She would kiss him, and then maybe they could see a movie. If he'd only thought of this before. Suddenly, rough hands gripped his package, and he felt himself borne up. He landed with a thud in a truck and was off. Marcia Bronson had just finished setting her hair. It had been a very rough weekend. She had to remember not to drink like that. Bill had been nice about it, though. After it was over, he said he still respected her, and after all, it was certainly the way of nature. Even though, no, he didn't love her, he did feel an affection for her. And after all, they were grown adults. Oh, and Bill could teach Waldo. But that seemed many years ago. Sheila Klein, her very, very best friend, walked in through the porch screen door and into the kitchen. Oh, God, it's absolutely maudlin outside. Ugh, I know what you mean. I feel all icky. Marcia tightened the belt on her cotton robe with the silk outer edge. Sheila ran her finger over some salt grains on the kitchen table, licked her finger and made a face. I'm supposed to be taking these salt pills, but she winked her nose. They make me feel like throwing up. Marcia started to pat herself on the chin, an exercise she'd seen on television. God, don't even talk about that. She got up from the table and went to the sink where she picked up a bottle of pink and blue vitamins. Want one? Supposed to be better than steak. And then attempted to touch her knees. I don't think I'll ever touch a daiquiri again. She gave up and sat down, this time near to the small table that supported the telephone. Maybe Bill will call, she said to Sheila's glass. Sheila nibbled on the cubicle. After last night, I thought maybe you'd be through with him. I know what you mean. My God, he was like an octopus, hands all over the place. She gestured, raising her arms upward in defense. The thing is, after a while, you get tired of fighting with him, you know. And after all, I didn't really do anything Friday and Saturday, so I kind of owed it to him. You know what I mean? She started to scratch. Sheila was giggling with her hand over her mouth. I tell you, I felt the same way. And even after a while, she came forward and whispered, I wanted to crack her. Now she was laughing very loudly. It was at this point that Mr. Jameson of the Clarence Darrow Post Office rang the doorbell of the large sticker-covered frame house. When Marsha Bronson opened the door, he helped her carry the package in. He had his yellow and his green slips of paper signed and left the 15-cent tip that Marsha had gotten out of her mother's small beige pocketbook in the den. What do you think it is? Sheila asked. Marsha stood with her arms folded behind her back. She stared at the brown cardboard carton that sat in the middle of the room. I don't know. Inside the package, Waldo quivered with excitement as he listened to the muffled voices. Sheila ran her fingernail over the masking tape that ran down the center of the carton. Why don't you look at the return address and see who it's from? Waldo felt his heart beating. He could feel the vibrating footsteps. It would be soon. Marsha walked around the carton and read the ink-scratched label. Oh, God, it's from Waldo. That schmuck, said Sheila. Waldo trembled with expectation. Well, you might as well open it, said Sheila. Both of them tried to lift the stapled flap. Said Marsha. You must have nailed it shut. They tugged on the flap again. My God, you needed power drill to get this thing open. They pulled again. Can't get a grip. They both stood still, breathing heavily. Why don't you get a scissor, said Sheila. Marsha ran into the kitchen, but all she could find was a little sewing scissor. Then she remembered that her father kept a collection of tools in the basement. She ran downstairs, and when she came back up, she had a large sheet metal cutter in her hand. This is the best I could find, she told her friend. Here, you do it. I'm gonna die. She sank into a large fluffy couch and exhaled noisily. Sheila tried to make a slit between the masking tape and the end of the cardboard flap. The blade was too big and there wasn't enough room. God damn this thing, she said, feeling very exasperated. Then smiling, I got an idea. What, said Marsha. Just watch, said Sheila, touching her finger to her hand. Inside the package, Waldo was so transfixed with excitement that he could barely breathe. His skin fell quickly from the heat, and he could feel his heart beating in his throat. It would be soon. Sheila stood quite upright and walked around to the other side of the package. Then she sank down to her knees, grasped the cutter by both handles, took a deep breath, and plunged the long blade through the middle of the package, through the masking tape, through the cardboard, through the cushioning, and right through the center of Waldo Jeffers' head, which split slightly and caused little rhythmic arcs of red to pulsate gently in the morning sun.